Mr. Benedict de Souza, room 6. What were these soldiers doing?
They were just running left, right, right and left, and heading for... It was a very long time ago. I can't remember. I wouldn't, you know, stop to look at to see who was doing what. All we knew that the war was ended and we had lost, and make tracks for home. And that's what we were told.
But just before the surrender, when you were moving away...
No, there was nothing much to see. We were either hidden or, you know, there was nothing. We were just concerned about ourselves and waiting for instructions. And the instructions were that we had surrendered. You surrender yourself or go back home.
Before you heard of the surrender, what was the morale like of the members of this MFA?
Well, we were young, we didn't worry about morale and things like that, but we knew it was forthcoming, and we were sort of waiting for a way to accept it. We were not anti-British, things like that, or put the blame on them. No, we just moved on as we were told. Young lads, men, 21.
Could you describe to us how were you told that the British had surrendered?
You see, the British had, our officers above us were, I think, a little sad and worried. And so they turned around and told us, well, this is it, we have surrendered. You boys have been locally enlisted, you can surrender yourself to the Japanese or go back to your families if they are here, because some of them had come from Malacca. Or do as you please.
When did they tell you, when did they give you these instructions?
On the day of surrender.
At Victoria Theatre, were all of you the only people there?
No, there were chunks of us there. There were, you know, a mixture of a lot of people. I cannot remember who and who were there.
So when your officers told you this news, did he tell it to the other people who were...
No, it was just, we were all berserk there. Okay, Li Ling, you want to go so-and-so? Okay, what do I do? Okay, you just go there and you know, the same thing. They were just shouting it out, because they knew the day was ended.
So the news was sort of passed to everyone, not just restricted to the MFA?
No, to us. Because we were looking up to our own officers. I wouldn't go to the Remy or to the AKEX.
So your officers were telling your unit the news, not to the rest of the...
Not the unit, to whoever was present.
To belong to the MFA.
To belong to the MFA. Well, we went up to them and said, okay, chum, this is it. You go back home or surrender to the Japs.
What, do you have any idea what were the other units that were there at the Victoria Theatre?
Oh, I wouldn't know. It was just a mess.
Were they all uniformed people?
All uniformed. Maybe we had some of the locally non-combatant people, like the Singapore Volunteer Corps, which was the SVC. We had the... I can't remember the names now. They've all been changed. Those people. There could have been some of those people around.
Did you know whether they were given the same instructions?
Oh, I wouldn't know.
What were your reactions when you were given that instruction?
Well, we knew, well, this is it, boy. That's the end. The war is finished. Not in our favor. You do as you please. You want to stay behind, let them catch you. You want to surrender yourself, somewhere else play, or go back home, if you had a home in Singapore.
So, what happened subsequently after that?
Well, I found my way with a friend of mine. We drove a lorry up to St. Anthony's Road, Anthony Road it was called, in Newton, where my mother was with my sister and her family. And we went there and just stripped ourselves of our uniform and waited.
From Victoria's Theatre to Anthony Road, that journey, did you do with any incidents?
Yes, we did. But we had stripped ourselves already of our uniform. We had a white shirt and we walked about not knowing, because we were taken for Malays or Indians. They were not able to distinguish who we were. So we moved about in circles, we waited under trees and things like that. We didn't see any uniformed Japanese men on the way. We just made our way to wherever we wanted to go to. I made my way to Anthony Road.
Did you drive or did you walk?
We drove a little bit on the lorry, and we found that the lorry had no petrol, so we walked.
That was on the day of surrender itself.
Correct.
You were with how many friends?
I can't remember. One, two or three.
As you walked back to Anthony Road, did you see a lot of Japanese soldiers, or what did you see?
We saw them coming down in lorries, in truckloads or what have you, and one or two walking in the road, but that was all. See, they didn't bother. They were just concerned with going to the town area perhaps, or looking for food or looking for fun, I don't know. But we evaded them as much as possible. We were not looking for trouble.
Did they stop you?
No.
What were your impressions of this? Soldiers. Was that the first time you saw
the
them?
First time I ever set eyes on a soldier, on a Japanese soldier, and most of them were bearded through lack of shaving, not that they are by nature heavily bearded. They were dirty, scruffy, they carried a hip pack on their hips, and that's all.
Did you notice whether there were other local people moving about also?
Oh yes, there were. But don't ask me who they were and their numbers. But we were concerned with ourselves.
When you reached back home, what were your family's reactions?
Oh, they were very happy to see me. And they asked for my brother. I said, that's one thing I forgot. I do not know where he went to. We got lost. We were separated. So I said, I just didn't know at that moment. And they showed us, my sister, my mother showed me where a shrapnel passed through and all that, but nothing happened to the house. A little bit of bricks fell, that's all. Roof bricks, that was all. And I was hungry and they gave me to eat.
Did you know what happened to the rest of the MFA members?
At that day and for the next week, we were not concerned. As I said, we were concerned about ourselves. It was difficult to get communication anywhere unless they came to the house or we went out, and we didn't.
Did you find out what happened to them much later on?
No, we did not, or rather I did not go out of my way to find out anything about them, because there was no chance of meeting them. And it was only after we had settled down, say, 2 or 3 months after the surrender, that we made discreet inquiries, afraid that there were some spies around who might give us away.
What did you find out? What happened to the others?
Well, we didn't go out of our way to find out, but it came to us in dribs and drabs. And we found out that some were taken prisoner of war, some went to Siam Road in Singapore, some went to the Siam Railway.
Mr. D'Souza, what were you doing during the first few days after the British surrender?
Well, we lay low for a few days, maybe a few weeks, and walked around very, very precariously on the streets, hoping that we would not be spotted by any Japanese and be questioned. And day after day we went further and further than the usual walk. And we found out later that they were not disturbing us during the day, that is. So we ventured more and more until we got into the town and scouted around, opened our ears to listen to any news. At the same time, being very wary of anybody, unless we were sure they were on our side, our good friends. And we used to probe and find out what was happening, come back and, you know, relate to the family, because we were the only two men in the house, my brother and I. And when we could go to market, because at that time we were still using British money, when the all clear sign was given, my eldest sister used to do the marketing with us to help carry back the heavy things. And more or less we were just lazing around. We were eager to do some sort of work. There was nothing forthcoming, so we just laze around and utilize whatever money we had to buy our cigarettes. And most of the journey done was on foot. There were no buses running yet. There was some form of taxis, but there was no need to take it. We were quite healthy. We needed a walk, and we used to walk most of the places and didn't feel the strain.
Did you know what was happening in Singapore during those first few days?
Exactly, as I said, we were just going around and finding out what was the situation like. And we couldn't take everything as genuine, because we had to use our own common sense to look around and see what was actually happening, whether they were building up, they were opening up any offices, whether they were going into business. But more or less it was just their own military men walking around, going here and going there. We didn't know what they were doing actually.
Was there freedom of movement during those first few days?
Oh yes, there was plenty of freedom of movement. As I said, we used to do a lot of walking, especially during the day. At night we were not so keen to go out. There was no television, I think, at all. So we used to play mahjong sometimes, or a game I learned only after the Japanese took over Singapore. And either that, or we'd sit down and talk, or walk around, you know, as close as we, not very far away, to friends that we knew, and we just have a yarn and go back. And at that time we hadn't any newspapers yet. The newspapers came out, I couldn't tell you exactly when, but during that period, no. There were no newspapers at all. So it was just, you know, mixing up with friends. I see you, you see me, and we had a good long talk and go back to bed.
Did you meet with a lot of Japanese guards when guarding the different places when you were moving around?
During the day or night?
Daytime,
yes. If we were, say, going into the president's area, there we would be stopped around Orchard Road near Yauhan, you know. We would have been stopped. The old Cuppage Road, yes. But they didn't bother us much. Just ask us who we were, and we couldn't speak Japanese very well. Where we were going, and made signs and let us off with a very harsh tone. Eh? Sort of, okay, get on your way sort of thing. That was all. They never bothered us. Unless we were fair, and some of the Chinese were stopped. Some of them were beaten for nothing at all. just gave them a slap. They just wanted to hit somebody. But thank God I was not slapped during the day, only once at night.
Did you know when you were moving around, did you observe whether there were a lot of people on the streets as well?
Oh yes. You see, we were staying in Anthony Road, that's Newton area. And there were a lot of people. It was normal. It's only that nobody knew what was forthcoming. Everybody was just worried, you know, as to where we can get food, any jobs, any way of doing business. For the first 6 months it was like that. You see, when the Japanese took over Singapore, captured Singapore rather, when the British ran in, the Japanese army was somewhere near Newton, Bukit Timah, Newton. And they put a halt there. Now, up to that point, the Japanese soldiers could do whatever they wanted. They could loot, they could rob, they could slap anybody, they could rape, they could do what they want. They were allowed to do what they wanted. And being sex starved for so many years or months, I don't know, and being let loose like monkeys, so they did whatever whatever came their way, whether it was human, whether it was inhuman, whether it was bestial, they didn't worry, they just did what they wanted. And they ate, they used to go to the houses and demand food, because they used to only carry a pouch of food. And that pouch of food was supposed to last them all the way, and a flask of water. That much we learned.
Did you know whether there was any kind of victory parade by the Japanese?
There was not so much a victory. You could have called it a victory parade. But actually it was victory, and it was more of a sneering parade, because they got all the British soldiers together and made them march half naked, only with their shorts or their trousers on. Made them sweep the streets, made them sweep, especially City Hall around on there, and march about. To the sneers of the onlookers, of the Singapore citizens and the Japanese soldiers.
When was that?
A few days after the surrender, 1 week, 2 weeks. Because immediately after the surrender, they got all the soldiers and locked them up in various camps. Where they were, I wouldn't know. It could have been Tanglin, could have been Bukit Timah, Pasir Panjang, West Coast Road. That's what all I can think of. Siam Road. Well, Siam Road was a deadly place. It was hell. And Changi, all the way, you know, lower Changi upwards. That is as far as I can remember.
Did you see these prisoners of war yourself?
Well, just a wee bit, because I was afraid that, well, I didn't like the idea of seeing my own, you know, fellow soldiers being treated that way. And we just saw them being marched away, and that was all. They were packed up in the lorries and brought to goodness knows where.
Earlier you mentioned about the incident with the Japanese guard at night. Could you tell us more about that?
Well, I was playing music, and one night I was walking back from Lower Bukit Timah right up to Newton with my guitar slung in my hand, and it was in a case. And there was the entrance of Kavanagh Road. And they stopped me and asked me what was inside. So I said, it was a guitar. Take it out and show me. So I took it out and showed them. They asked me to play. And I was tired, and maybe I had a few drinks, I don't know. And I started playing and singing. There was one song that came to my mind, and that was a very childish song called Aruke, means walk. See, and I started saying that, playing and singing it, he gave me a slap as if to say, you're no darn good. You're a lousy singer. He let me go, that's all. That was the first and last time.
During the early period when the Japanese just came in to Singapore, did they ask for the ex-members of the different services to report?
They did not, but they did ask the police, the spies, the local spies, to go and look for them. I think so. I'm not quite sure. But they didn't send out some sort of a proclamation or something like that. They left us alone. But if we were caught, maybe we would have got hell.
Do you remember whether they asked the Eurasian community to report to the Japanese authorities?
At that time, no. Later on, yes.
When was the later period?
Well, that was a long time after that, about a year and a half.
In the beginning, there wasn't any calling up by the Japanese or the Eurasians or the volunteers to report to them?
No.
Do you know what happened to the other communities, like the Chinese and the Malays? Whether any one of them were being called up?
They were not called up, but they were just caught. And they had to build their own trenches, build their own graves, and they were blindfolded, they were shot, and they fell into the grave, and other Chinese had to bury them. And the same people did the same thing. Well, that was right from the very beginning. They were still mad about the Sino-Japanese war, you see. So they thought all the Chinese were, you know, them Chinese from China. That was the mentality of these people. Now anybody with whatever rank he had could do whatever he wanted. And so they stood bore grudge against the Chinese, and that's what they did. Even some poor old Chinese in a Baba type, they had the worst of it also. It was a very sad and pathetic story. As a matter of fact, I don't like to recall it very much. To think that I could have been a Chinese and my brother, my mother, my father, and I would have had to dig a hole and bury them after they were shot.
Do you remember whether there was any kind of registration of the population by the Japanese to take note of who you are? What were you doing?
I don't remember. I don't think so. Anyway, I don't remember.
You mentioned earlier that your sister was given a red and white tag to say that she was
half European or half British.
When did that happen?
Very soon after the capture of Singapore.
How did the Japanese go about giving them the red and white tag?
They just spotted you on the road and asked you who you were, and the word is Ainoko or Aikokujin, which means you are European. So I'm not quite sure whether it was Aikokujin or Ainoko. Ainoko could be half caste, like what we are, you know, you can call it. And she was fair, so half European or half Asian. I can't remember the right word. And there was no choice between, because husband and wife were fair, so put them in Sam Road camp.
You mean they were caught off the street and asked who they were?
I think, I can't remember the story, but I think they came to the house and took them, and they were peacefully and they went nicely.
When did this occur?
In the first 2 or 3 months. Very, very early after the surrender.
And they were in prison in
Siam Road camp
throughout the whole of the
no. And then they were allowed to go. They put them in a boat and they were allowed to go to England, those who wanted to go. So a lot of people claimed that they were Europeans, they went there. Some of them didn't live to tell the tale.
Do you remember how long your sister and your brother-in-law were in the Siam Road camp before they shipped off?
Not more than 3 or 4 months. I think so. I'll have to write to them and get the story.
Generally, how did the Japanese treat the various communities in Singapore at that time?
Initially, they didn't like the Chinese. They sort of played ball with the Malays, and until such time that they realized that they could be traitors for the British, they could also be traitors for the Japanese, and they wiped them off, a lot of them, but not so many as the Chinese. The Indians, they didn't like the Indians because they were black, dark. They didn't like them, and eventually even the Indians didn't do very well, even as laborers. I'm trying to think at the moment what they did in Singapore. Because they did work as laborers, I think. Can't remember very well. But they were not in the majority.
You mentioned about the Japanese getting rid of some of the Malays. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, some of them were shot. Mm-hmm. We heard and we believe that they were shot. And some of them were badly treated. They were given the vermin treatment sort of thing, and they didn't get much from the Japanese. But I think around after 6 or 7 months, they realized that, you know, word went around. So they had to lie low after that. They never came into the limelight.
The Malays?
Malays.
You were referring to those Malays who were informers for the Japanese?
Yeah, as well as anybody else who looked like Malays. And, well, this went on, don't forget, the military was still in charge. Until the civilians took over, they had the worst of it. They had to lie low. And they couldn't walk about freely like the others.
How did you know what the Japanese did to them?
Stories.
Did you happen to know any of it?
No. As a matter of fact, nobody has told us since.